Konnichiwa. Nihon Cricket Pod do yokoso. Well, here it is. One everyone's been waiting for. The post-men's East Asia Pacific Sub-Regional Qualifier B podcast. I have with me the only person I could possibly invite to do this episode, head coach, Mr. Dougal Benningfield. Dougal, good day.
Good to be here, Alan. And that's quite a mouthful, the actual name of that tournament. Can you say that again?
No, I definitely abbreviated it to something. We couldn't even fit it all on the trophy. It was ridiculous. But yeah, regular listeners might notice that I'm feeling sounding a bit hoarse. Dougal, just before we came on air, I was having a good cough. You were blowing your nose. Is it safe to say we're a bit run down after what's been a fairly intense couple of weeks?
It's been a busy couple of weeks, but yeah, feeling okay. Ready to go.
Ready to go again. Japan Cup finals this weekend. Women's East Asia Cup next weekend. Yeah, no rest for the wicked here. Okay, so what we're going to do is we'll run through, first of all, the bilateral series with Indonesia, I think. We'll talk a little bit about that before we get into the tournament itself. There were no less than 11 debuts in that series. It was a series that Japan ultimately won 2-1, having got over the line pretty comfortably in the first two games, but just slipped up in the third. In match one, Japan made 143 for 7 off their 20 overs, with Sabaraj Ravichandran making 44 off 29 and Alex Shilai Patmore making 25 off 18. Indonesia were restricted to 78 for 9, and Leo Sakurano Thomas took 5 for 17. So that was a 65-run win for Japan. 8 debutants in that game. In match 2, Japan made 179 for 4 from just 17 overs. Lachlan Yamamoto Lake made 57 not out of 42. And Kendall Kadawaki Fleming, the skipper, made 81 of 40. Indonesia were restricted to 104 for 6 from their 17 overs, with Kohei Kubota taking 1 for 13 from 3. So that was a 75-run win for Japan. But then on match day 3, the first game to be played in the morning, Japan were all out for 79 from 16.5 overs. Ibi Takahashi, the only one who really got going, he made 26 off 31. And Indonesia squeaked home 82 for 7 from 16 overs. Piyush Kumbhari took 2 for 8 from his 4. But Indonesia won that game by 3 wickets to just get a little bit of, to stop the momentum a little bit, I think, for Japan. So we'll look at it as a whole, Dougs, first of all. At the halfway point, at the end of that series, leading into the tournament, what was the feeling from yourself and the boys? As I said, you'd capped 11 new players. You got to have a look at everyone. There was, after that series, there was an injury replacement we were to talk about. So yeah, come that Tuesday afternoon, I should say. How are you feeling and how are the boys feeling?
Yeah, I suppose one of the highlights probably was off the field just before that first game when we handed 8 caps to players on debut, which I've just never heard of happening before, but such is the nature of having almost a four-year break between T20 internationals. So there was a lot of excitement around the group, a lot of new players coming together.
Yeah, I've got to interrupt you. It's good to talk about that, actually. Why don't you go through a little bit what we did, that? Because that was good.
We worked out that there were going to be 8 players on debut. So
match day one, right?
We ended up getting 4 past players who are still making significant contributions to Japan cricket to present those 8 caps. So they each presented 2 caps to 2 of the new players.
Let's name those guys.
So
memory test.
Yeah, memory test. Absolutely. The 2 commentators, Takuro Hagihara and Shun Hashiba, who both made their own debuts for Japan more than 10 years ago. Takuro especially has played almost 50 games, I think, for Japan. He was really a stalwart, opened the bowling for a long, long time. And they were both in the commentary box for that series. We also had one of our previous captains, I guess, who did quite well in the last time we played in the Philippines, was Tomoki Ota. He presented a couple of the caps. And we also got, we roped in Bebe Miyagi, who's done a lot of work for the Japan Cricket Association in a staff role. He's done many, many things, and he's actually working with the women's squad in the upcoming tournament. Played a lot of cricket for Japan, so all of those four guys are very important, and they all spoke very well presenting those caps, I thought.
Yeah, it was nice. I specifically made the point of being there for that because it was the first time we'd done it properly, if you like. We'd kind of done it a bit in some past tournaments, but I really felt it was the first time we'd pushed across to the players the importance of what it means to represent Japan and getting some of the past players to speak about it. And I thought they all spoke really well. I mean, Shun particularly he got a bit emotional, which was great, actually.
Yeah.
And that just made everyone realize, yeah, this is different to the kind of cricket we played before. I thought that was a really great way to kick off the series. So, yeah, it was good to see it, good to be a little bit part of it.
Yeah, and that particular day we rolled into the match and we started pretty well with a strong win over Indonesia, who are an up-and-coming side in T20 cricket in the region.
Yeah, they got amongst us at the start, didn't they? We were struggling a little bit. I've just got our power play score was 33 for 2, which I'm sure isn't quite what you would have expected, but then...
No.
But what? Sparish Ravichandran came in. Like I say, he made 44 off 29, which is his best score of the whole seven matches in the end. And now Srilai Patmal batted pretty well as well for his 25 off 18. And all in all, with that batting lineup, on that particular day, you had Supa Navaratna coming in at 7, and the skipper and Lockie Yamamoto Leg opening the batting. And we got to 143 for 7, which looked a pretty decent score. And then Rao Sakuralo Thomas really got amongst it and took what I believe is the third best figures on T20 international debut, 5 for 17. I think they would have been the second best figures if he hadn't been whacked for 6 off his last ball.
Ah, his last ball went for 6, that's right. Yeah.
But with 8 debutants, a win by 65 runs, all in all, that was a pretty good day's work. And I think we were, without wanting to sound disparaging, we were pretty impressed with Indonesia. It was a comfortable win, but I think we were quite surprised at how they came out. It was their first game in a long time. But actually, they looked like a pretty decent outfit, didn't they? Because we haven't not seen them for 4 years. We didn't really know what to expect.
Yeah, they play with a lot of spirit, great enthusiasm. They're well coached, well drilled. They're all playing as a team. So, yeah, they're trying to get the most out of themselves, that's for sure. And I suspect they're going to get better and better in the coming years, actually.
Yeah, their opening bowler, Maxi Korda, took 3 for in that game. I'm running it down, but
yeah,
he looked a handful in the leggy. Eddie Ottawan looked pretty handy as well. And those two guys would go on to excel throughout the series, didn't they? And occasionally be a thorn in our side. But all in all, coming off the back of that game, it was a good day's work. It's win by 65 runs.
Yeah. Now we were in a bit of trouble too, and the match was really set up by that fifth wicket partnership between Sabarish Ravichandran and Alex Patmore, two of the older players in the squad. Sabarish on international debut, but Alex having played before in the past, and they basically showed the team how to bat through those middle overs on a slowish wicket that they scored really comfortably and really set the game up for us.
Yeah, it was an interesting one. I'm sure there were plenty of nerves around that day with so many people making their debuts. It was always going to be, always likely to be a bit disjointed. But yeah, those old heads calmed those nerves. And then once we started taking wickets up front, the game looked done and dusted pretty quickly, I think. And it was, a very, very good way to kickstart the series. And I'm sure everyone was very pleased about that. And then moving into the second game, it was wet. It was a delayed start. Had to reduce the game to 17 overs. One of those games where the toss is scheduled to be 45 minutes before the start. And then because of the wet weather and not wanting to lose overs, we ended up tossing and starting within 15 minutes. So it was all a bit hectic suddenly.
Yep.
So to come out and make 179 for 4 off 17 overs, and comparatively, the power play in the last game, 33 for 2. This time it was 68 for 1. That was obviously a plan, and we're going to come back to this a bit in the course of this chat, but going hard in the first six, obviously a structured plan.
Oh, very much so. And it's, yeah, it's not a new plan in 2020 cricket, is it? It's been done before, but we felt like we could have a pretty long batting order, bat down to 8 or 9, and that would give us the luxury of going a little bit harder in the power play than we normally would, suiting the natural instincts of a Lockie Yamamoto Lake. For that particular match, we decided to throw in another batsman up top, Supun Navaratne. He wasn't there for a long time, but 15 off 9 got us going. And then the captain was able to really pick it up when he got it, 81 off 40, including 5 sixes. So he really got a hold of the Indonesian bowling and probably could have or should have ended up with 100 in that match.
Yeah, it was the first time. I mean, for you and I was lucky enough to be commentating that day, and getting to watch those two guys bat together. You know, we've been around. Kendall's been waiting for so many years to play for Japan, and we've been following Lockie Yamamoto's Lake's progress since he was a 15-year-old. And to see those guys, I can't remember the numbers, but I think it was about 120-run partnership they put on in 60-odd balls, I think. To see them batting together felt like, yeah, this was the plan that we had for so long. And to watch them go out and do it and execute, not just execute, but the way they executed was a joy to watch, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, it was good. They've made 128 runs in 11 overs, so that's pretty good going in any game of cricket, that's for sure. And, Lockie, probably it was that match that he really kind of hit a bit of form, a bit of a slow start, but towards the second half of his innings, he was really, really good.
The thing that really got me in that innings from Lockie was Kendall was going hard and striking it very, very well. And I actually had dinner with Kendall 2 nights later, and I was asking him about this, and he was saying how when he's on, he tends to face a lot of balls and take a lot of the strike. And
yeah,
need a guy at the other end who's okay with that. And in that particular innings, I mean, Lockie's finished 57 not out, but he's only faced 42 balls. But at no point in that innings did he try and emulate what Kendall was doing. So he might only face 2 or 3 balls and over. He didn't try and necessarily whack him for 6. It was a bad ball he did, because as you can see, his strike hit 57 off 42. So he's obviously going okay. But some batters can get a little bit flustered when the guy at the other end is going so well, they feel they need to match it. And Lockie didn't do that. And I thought that was really a real sign of maturity for a 19-year-old.
Yeah, he probably played the supporting role. And then once Kendall got out, he really picked up the slack and scored a couple of boundaries himself. So, really important innings from him. And don't forget, he's coming from Perth cricket in Australia, traditionally fast, bouncy wickets, and probably batting on something a little bit the opposite of that at Sunil at the moment. So he did really well adapting to the conditions.
Yeah, it was a good one to watch. And we had restricted Indonesia to just 104 for 6 from their overs. They, you know, looked to be wanting to spend more time, I think. They didn't really go too hard. Their opener, Priyandana, I think, made 45 not out in that game. Looked a decent player. But Kohei Kubota came in and got his first international wicket, I think, in that game. He took 1 for 13. But also, there were 2 other debutants in that game, of course, which we shouldn't overlook. Vinay Iyer, Kento Otadorbel, both made their debuts.
Yep.
Vinay, everyone in Japan cricket knows who Vinay is. He's been around for 8-9 years and has excelled on a regular basis. And that meant a lot to him to get that that cap.
Yeah, certainly. He's been plying his trade in Japan for a long, long time and scoring big runs for a number of seasons. So, you could see in his eyes how much it meant to him, that's for sure.
I had a quick chat to him afterwards. He took a great catch, I think, down a short point.
Like, yeah, okay. Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I'm just happy to have contributed something. He didn't get to bat.
He did a bat, you know.
He was happy to have done something. And yeah, as a unit, I think it was more about restricting the team. And yeah, in the end, a 75 run win. So at that point, you're pretty happy with life, right? You're 2-0 up. The series is secured.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. And we were planning on winning the next match as well. It didn't quite happen that way.
Yeah. So it's a good place to start. We've seen, as you mentioned, Kendall and Lockie, we were two guys that we've looked at a lot. They opened the batting in the first game. Supan came in to open the batting in the second game, but then was left out of the third, and Kendall went back up to open again.
Yeah.
Just talk us through what the thinking behind that. In these series, you know, as much as we don't like to call it a warm-up, you are testing out combinations.
Yeah.
What was the process behind those selections and those partnerships that you wanted to work on?
Well, we did want to try a lot of things. So when you haven't played as a team together before, there's a lot of trial and error. And on this particular occasion, there was probably more error than success. So, but you don't know until you try it. So it's about trying different players in different roles. It's also, I mean, it's 2020 cricket, that there is a little bit of luck involved, a little bit of a flow on effect. One wicket falls and another one falls straight after, and all of a sudden you go into your shell a bit. These things do happen in the short formats of the game. We were rotating the team throughout that three-match series. We handed another debut on this particular day to,
yeah, we'll come to that.
Ryan Drake. And for whatever reason, it didn't quite click that day. The Indonesian bowlers did a really great job, and we just didn't respond well that day.
Yeah, I can see you've got the figures in front of you, but I think they're leggy. Eddie Otawan, he put in a decent show.
He was a surprise packet throughout.
Yeah, we struggled with him, didn't we?
The whole of both the tournaments, he bowled exceptionally well.
Mm.
Real good player.
Turned out he only started bowling leg spin this year as well.
Yep.
So he's only going to get better.
Yep.
But I remember watching that game and thinking that, you know, it's one of those where we had a little partnership going, I think, between Ibi Takahashi and Alex Shirai Patmore. Pat had missed the second game because he had to do a whole lot of parent-teacher meetings, such as the nature of associate cricket. Couldn't quite get that day off work.
Well, we just
he came
strategically decided to rest for that middle yeah. game. Yeah.
So then Pat coming back in. Those two were batting okay, but there was clearly a frustration. I remember Ibi's dismissal particularly, he was the one who was in. Then he faced five dot balls against a leg spinner and then hit the fifth one single up in the air. And it was a classic example of looking for a release shot and suddenly...
Certainly.
We've lost two wickets in no time and we're in trubs. Ultimately, 79 all out, 79 all out is never going to be enough. But they fought pretty well, and we have to come to the start of the game and talk a little bit about Ryan Drake. Ryan, you can adhere more to this. He's someone who's been on the radar for more than 3 years. Tall, fast bowler, can bowl speeds that no one else in Japan can bowl. Very much a project player for us, and having been named in the 14, we needed to see him play. The only reason he hadn't played sooner was because he arrived with an injury. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about that?
He'd been carrying a minor hamstring strain for 2 or 3 weeks prior to the tournament.
Picked up playing football.
We were anticipating him to be right by the time the match had started, and there was still a little bit of tightness there. And we waited until the third game, and we wanted to test it out. And he looked pretty good from what we saw in the warm-ups, and we thought we'd test it out. And it wasn't quite ready, so we probably made an error there. But we needed to see if he was fit to go or not. So
yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say it was an error. I mean, he had to play because you can't go into a tournament having not played any matches as a fast bowler in the warm-up. It's better to have a game like that in what is a dead rubber than in the first game of the tournament. So, you know, really tough on Ryan, such a great kid, someone who still, you know, hopefully has a bright future with Japan cricket. He's still only 19, he turned 20 during the tournament. And for someone like him, you know, it could have been a knockout blow, but actually his reaction I thought was fantastic. He stayed around, He scored all 4 days during the tournament. Really wanted to be around the boys and support them. He didn't let the injury get him down. So yeah, I thought that was a really good showing of a maturity and a desire to be in the group still.
Yeah, he's a great kid, and we certainly haven't seen the last of him. I think as a coaching group, we were just really, really keen to see him out there, and unfortunately the timing wasn't right this time, but I know we're going to see him again. And it probably didn't work out for our bowlers as a group that day either. I mean, we took wickets. I think we had them 7 down as they passed our, you know, modest total, very low total. But we did bowl some poor deliveries as well in amongst those 7 wickets. So on another day, we felt like we could have even bowled them out.
Yeah, well, I mean, just again, just for comparison's sake, for us in our power play, we were 28 for 3 that day. And when we lose our 3 big guns early, pressure came and we didn't really deal with it very well, did we? And then at the same time, we took a few wickets from those guys and we had them in the middle of trouble. And you could see they were battling. And again, I was on commentary that day. And I actually genuinely thought we might bowl them out at one point. Piyush Kumbhari was rested in the second game, came back that day and bowled 4 overs, 2 for 8.
Yeah.
And really had them in trouble. And there was a point where it looked like we might still turn them over. And a credit to Indonesia, they got better throughout the series, I think, and they continued to get better throughout the tournament as well. But as a group, you know, what impact did that result have? Having had 2 such comfortable wins, was it a bit of a reality check for the boys?
Yeah, it was a reality check. We pretty much had everything our own way kind of in the first 2 games. So to be bowled out for 79 in the third match was a bit of a wake-up call that we're going to have to fight really hard to win these World Cup qualifiers. So we still had a lot of confidence after that match. We just realized that if we don't put it together, we can certainly lose to this Indonesia team, which was the case on that day.
Yeah, we'll touch more on this. And, you know, when any team suffers a defeat, particularly when there's a gap. So that game was on the Tuesday. The first game of the tournament was then on the Saturday. You have quite a lot of time to dwell on it and sweat on it, and people get, you know, think about it a little bit. The reaction's really important, right? The reaction that we saw in the first game of the tournament couldn't have been any better, right? So let's just remind everyone of the tournament scores. We'll do it match by match this time, I think. So match 4 or match 1 of the tournament. Japan batting first against Korea. We made 218 for 8. And our captain, Kendall Kadawaki Fleming, made 114 from 46 balls. And this was Japan's 100th international game. And Kendall has made the first ever T20 international 100 by a Japanese player. To be fair to Korea, they've hit pretty hard. They made 170 for 6. Again, Kohei Kubota, the 2 for 28 from 4, was probably the pick of the bowlers. That was a win by 48 runs. We had Supanar right in the back at the top of the order. And in that power play, 63 for 1. So similar to that second game, but then continued that pace because Kendall stayed in. I'll be the first to admit that was a pretty special day. How did you find it? What was it like in the group and just being out there and watching Kendall score the 6th fastest T20 international 100 of all time?
Yeah, it was a bit of a strange day because there'd been a lot of rain in the lead up. So there was a fair bit of anxiety about whether the match was going to go ahead. What's going to happen if it just keeps raining and then we don't even get to play any of the matches. And you probably know a bit more about it than myself, but the match got switched onto a different surface, synthetic pitch. So all of our preparation had been geared towards playing on the Sunor turf pitch, obviously. So there was a adjustment right there. And we were thinking, are we going to are we going to play? And then, of course, we saw the match in the morning between the two teams. So,
yeah, it's worth bringing that up, isn't it? You know, the three matches we just discussed against Indonesia were all on the turf.
Yeah.
And then we arrived. There was a lot of overnight rain. The pitch was very squelchy. We saw an early decision made by the umpires to move to the synthetic. There was a check to make sure that that was going to be okay, which it was. Our belief or our understanding going into the tournament, right, was that if you play on, you have to play on the same surface throughout, but we were told that that wasn't the case, which is, you know, good.
Yeah.
You want to play on turf as much as you can. But day one was all played on the synthetic. And we'd seen Indonesia battle to 130 off, I think, 19 overs.
Yeah. Their
bowl career out for 66.
And we were flabbergasted by that.
Yeah.
We just, having played a lot on that synthetic pitch, how can you get bowled out for 60-something on that pitch? It just didn't make sense.
Yeah, I think that was definitely a case of Korea just getting off a plane and Indonesia having three matches under their belt. You know, even though it was on a different surface, I think Korea just, they were just not at the races at all.
Yeah.
Of course, the training day got really interrupted. It was rain on the training day. Korea hadn't had much of a session at all.
Sure.
And they very much looked like they were caught cold. And then in the second innings against us in that afternoon game, we saw what they can do.
Well, yeah, I mean, I had to make the point to the boys before the match after Korea got bowled out 60-odd on the synthetic pitch. I just said, look, they're not that bad. They won't be that bad again. They will not bat that badly. They will come out and they will swing the bat. And if we bowl balls in their kind of swinging arc, they've got some big bat swings, these guys, they're going to go miles. And we did see a little bit of that in the second innings, but we were still keen to bat first, put them back into the field, playing for a second time during the day, which is a bit of a strange one in this day and age. You don't see it that often in international cricket, a team having to play
twice in a day,
successive T20 matches in a day. We thought that was an advantage to us, and we'll put them straight back into the field, which we did. And they came out, and they probably got a little bit wrong with their bowling, and we after having lost one early wicket, Kendall certainly didn't waste any time, and it was obvious, not obvious initially. He took probably three or four balls. He was just scratching around.
I've got a feeling his first three are a dot.
I was just a little bit nervous at that point, but once he unleashed a couple of boundaries, I thought, okay, something on here. And as it turned out, he raced to 100 very, very quickly.
Well, he took 30 off one over, and I think that was the real turning point of the game.
Yeah.
We were going okay. We were doing fine. I think it was the 11th over, maybe, if from memory.
Yeah.
And he just exploded against our leg spinner, short boundary,
ball
to him as a left-hander.
And, yeah.
But they weren't all over there. Like, he was hitting sixes over extra cover from the fourth and fifth.
Yeah. Now, that was an important over. I mean, without criticizing the Korean tactics, their second leg spinner bowling to our left-handed captain on a synthetic pitch in a 50-meter boundary might have been a miscalculation. And we needed those big overs throughout the innings because we saw the way they batted in the second innings, and they were capable of getting 170, 180. So the 218 was exactly what we needed.
Yeah, I mean, Kendall's made 114 and he's got out in the 13th over. But we do need to talk a little bit more about, I think, that innings as a whole and what it meant. Because, again, as we've already mentioned, Kendall's someone who's been chopping at the bit to play for Japan for so long. And whilst the Indonesia series was a nice lead-in, it was all about the tournament for him. As I mentioned, he came around to mine for dinner a couple of nights before, and I was trying to talk to him about, you know, he's got engaged recently and how's his work doing. All he wanted to do was talk about the tournament. I've never seen a guy so focused. It was just tournament, 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 tournament. And to then come out and put on a display like that to say to everyone else, this is what Japan cricket is now. You know, we're on ICC TV. There's six cameras here. There's a crowd in. This is how we play. I thought as a statement of intent, it was phenomenal.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, it was a few years in the making. So Kendall's been a part of Japan cricket for a long time.
It's 2015.
And he's just been biding his time for that long. And I think the moment he connected with that straight drive was a slightly an off, was a straight drive and an off drive, but it was a bullet to bring up his 100.
Oh,
yeah. He let out this enormous roar. So there's a lot of pent up kind of frustration let out there, I think. And yeah, it was a wonderful moment.
Yeah, it was pretty special. And I think that one that hopefully captures the attention of a few people, because Kendall's too good a player to be just, you know, floating around in grade cricket in Brisbane. I mean, this is a guy who now he has a stage and a platform to show what he can do as captain of Japan. And I know that the commentators who came over were waxing lyrical about him, and hopefully he can continue to do great things for Japan, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's certainly embraced the role of the Japan captaincy, I believe. He certainly has the respect of the group. He set really good fields while he was out there. He spoke very well, even at the post-tournament presentation. I thought he spoke really well. And I think he's going to be in this role for some time to come.
For some time, yeah. But he sets a standard, doesn't he? And
definitely.
When other guys see someone go out and do that, when I had Kendall on this podcast in season one, and what he talked about a lot was, you have so many bad days as a batter, so that when it's your day, you've got to cash in. And it's not about making 40s, 50s. It's about making hundreds. So to go out in the first game of the tournament, make 100 and say to everyone, guys, we can do this. We're good enough to do this. I thought was a great example to set. And I celebrated it pretty hard.
Yeah, I think you did. Yeah, certainly set an example of what heights we can achieve, that's for sure, as individual players, not just as a collective. It's not just about making a flashy 30 and 40, as you say. You can go out there and you can make a T20 international 100 on the big stage.
T20 cricket, hundreds are still there if you want them. And we saw Rayo's Ekin Afifa as well. So
yeah,
in the not in this game, but obviously in the first game. So, you know, those 5-wicket hauls, those hundreds that we talk so much about in, you know, the older formats of the game, 50 over test match cricket, you can still do it in T20 cricket, and there are records there to be had, aren't there? So, you know, as we said, the sixth fastest T20 international 100, it's going to take some beating to knock him down the list. We had to back that up, of course. And up next was Indonesia, who had just beaten us in the previous contest. And we came out pretty hard against them in that next game. We bowled them all out for 83. Rayo Sakurano Thomas again to the fore. He took 3 for 10 in that game. So in two games against Indonesia, he'd taken 8 wickets for 28 runs, which isn't bad. And we chased that down very, very quickly. And something random stat that got thrown out to me just a couple of days ago, it was the first time ever in T20 international cricket that a team had chased down the total in less than half the overs, having lost more than half their wickets. So we chased that down in the 10th over, 6 wickets down. But again, just looking at that power play score, we were 63 for 3. So despite losing those early wickets, we kept going. Lucky Yamamoto Lake was 31 off 17 and Kendall was 21 off 8. So that's 21 off 7 before he gets out. So he's striking a 300 at that point. So these guys are clearly still going hard. So talk to us a little bit about that game plan. Again, Super Navaratna was still opening and Kendall was coming in at 3. So what was the thinking? Was there very much a plan that there was an understanding that on any given day, a team can slip up? So net run rate was going to be important.
Yeah, definitely. And It's quite common practice, actually, when you look at some of the T20 franchise leagues, that even if you're only chasing a low total, say around 100, you go very hard, even harder than you might already, just to make use of that power play, completely kind of demoralize the bowling team and just get the game finished as quickly as possible. And if you can pick up some net run rate advantage as well, then all the better. And it's the case in a tournament like this that if you pass the score no wickets down or 9 wickets down, it doesn't matter in terms of the net run rate. So we did want to finish the job as quickly as possible. We weren't planning on losing 6 wickets, particularly at
there was a bit of a wobble. We lost 3 for not many.
Yeah, there was 3 really, really quick ones.
In the 60s, I think, and we were 5 down. And
yeah,
suddenly it was like, this could get ugly.
So one of those wickets was a really strange one. Ibi Takahashi getting hit on the helmet by a leg break.
Didn't know that.
That then rolled onto his stumps somehow. So that was a strange one. And then we've lost one, I think, at one run short.
Yeah, Alex Shulai-Papel got out when the scores were level, I think.
Yeah, so it probably looked a bit dicier than it actually was. I thought it was a really good game from us, despite losing those 6 wickets. We bowled and fielded much better than we probably had in the previous 2 matches. All 7 of the bowls we used, I thought, did a fantastic job that day. And the intent in the power play after losing Supun quite early was excellent as well. Lockie and Kendall again. They've only batted together for a very short time. I think it was about 2 overs and they put on 34.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are 2 guys who, again, not to spend the whole time as a Kendall Kadawaki appreciation podcast, but I've seen Kendall bat a bit and I was surprised at how aggressive he was. I saw it more as a kind of a classical player. And to see him come out and strike at 220, I think, during the tournament, I mean, it just shows that he's at a level higher than everyone else. And to be, 21 off 8 in the chase, to be able to do that from ball 1 or maybe in his case, ball 3, he likes to look at the first couple and then go. Lockie is clearly an attacking player who has the ability to access different parts of the ground. Kendall just plays good cricket shots and can play them from the moment he comes in, which is a great knack to have.
Yeah. Yeah, us certainly. And, it should be noted he's coming off a lot of runs in Brisbane grade cricket as well. So he was a player in form.
Yeah, we mentioned that previous
when he landed in Japan. So he had been scoring T20 80s, 90s, and 100s in the lead up to the tournament.
550 runs in springtime. Yeah, yeah, definitely. And we mentioned that in the previous podcast and we talked about how I think he'd been saying he hoped he hadn't used up all his form, but clearly carried a bit of it in. So then at that point, it was something that I kind of kept to myself, but I was very aware of history. And at that point, we've beaten all the teams in the tournament. It's the halfway stage and we're sat on the top of the table. Everyone's played 2 games and it's looking great. Of course, you and I were there 4 years previously when Japan won the first 3 games against Indonesia, Korea, and the Philippines in the Philippines. And we were already talking about the next stage and then it all went to hell. So this time around, there was a bit more of a focus and let's making sure we didn't let that opportunity slip. And I think the next game was probably our most complete performance of all of these 7 matches.
That's how I would describe it, definitely.
We bowled Korea all out for 91. We're back on the turf at this point, of course. And having seen them whack 170 in the previous game that we played, to get them all out for 91 was a big statement. And I thought on that day in particular, Piyush Kumbhari took 2 for 8. Didn't get a mention in the 3-2-1 that day, which was absolutely staggering.
That was interesting.
Spin twins to Barish, Ravichandran took a couple of wickets as well. And then again, absolutely blitzed that run chase, 95 for two from just 8.2 overs. And again, that power play, we were 74 for none, which is ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So again, clearly there was a plan on to get the game done.
Certainly. Yeah. Yeah. I think that much is obvious. Of course we want to make sure we win the game, but we did kind of have in the back of our mind that if we really iced the chase quickly, that would put our net run rate to a position that should we have a bad day on the last day, we'll get through anyway.
There was a huge opening partnership. It was 70, the opening partnership was 78. Supun Navaratna and Lockie Yamamoto late came off that day. Supun didn't make a lot of runs. He made, I think, 21 off 15 that day. And Lockie was just, I think he hit three sixes in a row in that game.
Yeah, I mean, it's not all about planning. You've got players going out there who have to assess the conditions, and a lot of the time they're batting on instinct and intuition. And if they get on a roll, they keep going with it. So in Lockie's case, he took a liking to one of their off spinners. And I think he took it for about 22 in one of his overs, which was great for us. And these kind of things happen in 2020 cricket. It's more about the players out there having a license to do what they do in certain situations.
So then three wins from three in the tournament, everything's looking rosy. And I didn't mention this before, actually. So we're going to talk about Makoto Taniyama.
Oh, yeah.
So Taniyama was left out of the first game, which I think was a big surprise to a lot of Japan cricket fans, because he is one of the most well-known players in Japan, mainstay of the team for something like 9 years, if not longer, even though he's still only 26. He's been in the team since he was 15-year-old. He was left out of that first game. We touched briefly on, people who understand cricket will understand very quickly, that game was being played with a synthetic with a short boundary, and a leg spinner who Kendall took a liking to. Tanya's a leg spinner, left him out. Shuga Kimura played for him.
Yeah.
And we decided to play the extra batter that day. He came back into the side once we were playing on the turf again.
Sure.
This particular day, again, the one game of the 2 days of the tournament that there were two matches in the day were both soggy and played on synthetic.
Yeah.
It was a typical, but he played Tani that day and he decided to promote him up the order and open him and leave Supun out. So talk us a little bit around the thinking there. And was that a drop or was that just a resting and an experimentation?
It was more of a resting and experimentation. We thought we were in a good position in the tournament. We quite liked the idea of playing seven bowlers, so we wanted to do that. And we thought, let's have a look at Tani up the top of the order.
Where he played before.
He has played there before as well. Supun wasn't going badly, but we just thought we'd try a little rotation and see if it worked or not.
In fact, Tani was opening the last tournament, wasn't he? So.
He was, yeah. He was. And he doesn't mind getting after the fast bowls as well early on. So we gave it a go and played the extra bowler. So managed to squeeze Sholto into the team that day as well. Having said all that, you have all these plans and sometimes it doesn't work. And that was the case that day. We had a really poor day, unfortunately.
Yeah, it got off to the best start though, didn't it?
Yeah.
Because Lockie gets the first ball, the game for six.
I know.
And I'm thinking, right, great. We're going to wrap this up. It's going to be party time from lunchtime.
Yeah.
I don't even need to watch the second game.
Yeah. But
it didn't go that way. Well, Lockie's made 22 off 9. Kendall again has made 31 off 22.
Mm.
But then once Kendall gets out, we've lost 7 for 34. At the power play, we were actually going fine, 51 for 2 at the power play. So a continued theme of most of the time, we do well in the power play, we win the game. And the two games we've had off have been one game we lost to Indonesia and the other game we recovered, which is the first game of the lot, which, you know, is understandable. But yeah, on this day, it just didn't happen. Everything kind of fell apart, really. And that can happen. And I was going to mention this earlier, but I wanted to save it till this particular point. One of the things that this shows is that T20 cricket, which we all know, on any given day, any team can beat anyone else.
Well, that's right. Yeah. It's a little bit like baseball in that the best team will win, you know, 60% of the time. This particular occasion too, again, it was another surprise thrown at us. Suddenly the surface of the pitch has changed dramatically, not just synthetic, but a wet synthetic pitch as well. So we started off okay, but for whatever reason, our middle order just didn't handle the conditions and probably batted poorly by their standards.
It was an interesting one. I was out there. I was there early. It was an early start. And if that was the first, and I'm not having a crack at the umpires or match referee at all, because I think they did a fantastic job and getting the game on was the most important thing. I was very happy the day before because we'd completed four games. We had to complete four games for the tournament to count.
Yep.
So on this particular day, if they'd all got washed out, I was all right with it. But I arrived, and I would say if that had been day one, we wouldn't have played, or we certainly wouldn't have played a 19 over game. When I got there, I mean, I could stand at the bowler's end and there was water coming onto my shoes. Uh-huh. And even when they decided to play, I was quite surprised. And I think even if that's a JCL game, I don't think we start at that particular time. So I think that was a wetter synthetic pitch than any of our guys would have played on before. And I think batting first, and Kendall said afterwards that in hindsight, it probably would have been better to bat second. But hindsight's, you know, perfect vision, isn't it? And I think on that particular day, setting a target was a bit harder than we might have anticipated, and guys just didn't handle it well. That being said, it dried out, the sun came out, and Indonesia breezed to the target, didn't they? I mean, they got there.
Yeah, I didn't think we bowled well either.
They got like three overs to spare.
I don't want to make any excuses, and I think the umpires did a great job getting the game on. I spoke to them after the game. It's my view that far too many games of cricket are cancelled due to, you know, wet conditions. Mm. We don't cancel soccer, football, rugby, any of those sports because of wet conditions. Let's play, and the players need to adapt to it.
And all the players understood that too, and they wanted to play. We all wanted to play.
No excuses. We didn't play well. We didn't adjust to the conditions, and well played Indonesia on that occasion.
I have to say, I thought they were fantastic that day. They were a really good side. They surprised all of us, I think, with how well they played. We knew they were going to come with sort of energy and accuracy, but I think that's almost doing them a disservice. I think they're actually better than that. And speaking to Nuon, the coach, I think he's done a fantastic job. He's identified certain players and given them specific roles.
Yeah.
They were saying that Eddie Artwan didn't bowl leg spin previous to this year.
He's done a great job.
Priyant Dana, the guy who's opening the batting, he used to bat at eight in his club. And Padmarkar Serva, Paddy.
Yeah.
He's the guy who can give it a whack and definitely made an impact for them. And there's the makings of a pretty promising side there. And I think they absolutely improved throughout the tournament and deserve a lot of credit for that. And the fact that they also beat Korea again, Korea finished winless in the tournament, which I think was a surprise for all of us.
Yes.
For us, of course, we would have preferred to have won 4 out of 4, but those big wins in games 2 and 3 really, as you mentioned previously, set the tone for us to finish at the top. We'd done the hard work. We could afford a slip up and we knew that was possible.
Mm.
So I guess moving away from that, we'll sum up the tournament
at
the moment, but just looking quickly at the future.
Can I just also just clarify for our listeners, we had not started celebrating a day
earlier. No,
we just played really badly that day.
We just celebrated that. I guess, I won't go into the future part just yet, but I guess one thing to talk about is that the the two games we lost in this seven matches that we've played were both in the morning. We won all our matches in the afternoon.
Wow.
Is there anything in that? I'm not a morning guy, dude. What?
Nah, I prefer the afternoon. But I'm not out there playing. I'm just telling people what to do. So I don't know. I hate kind of reading into things. So I'm some things just coincidence.
But yeah, if we look ahead to it, I mean, we'll sum up the tournament in a moment, but just briefly looking into the future. Philippines, Vanuatu, Papua New Guinea. Now, as we've just said, on any given day, any team can beat anyone else.
That's right. Yeah.
I think, and again, I don't say this with any disrespect or disparaging to Indonesia. I think in the games that we won, we showed that there is a difference between those two teams, but they showed that if they can play well and we have an off day, they can beat us. And I would like to think that that's an approach that we would take into a regional final against a team. Papua New Guinea are so experienced. They've
yes,
so that, many that's players true. Who have played a level yep. above, but they're beatable, aren't they?
Well, yeah.
If they're not there, we have a good day.
Of course they are. And the as you say, the 2020 format lends itself to the upset, especially in short tournaments. We've seen that at the current T20 World Cup.
I mean, we juggled
lots of upsets already. I think
First game of the tournament, Namibia,
Sri Lanka. Yeah.
Sri Lanka, Asia Cup champions, lose to Namibia in the first game. Namibia then lose their next two games and go up.
Yeah, so if you play that same match between Sri Lanka and Namibia, Sri Lanka are going to win X number of times, which might be 95 times, and Namibia will win 5 or 10 times. And as it happened, that's that they did win. Mm. So anything can happen. And you play these short tournaments, in this case, four matches, the one we just played, you can't afford to make too many errors. And the one we're going to go into is six matches. There's a lot of things that can happen, aren't there? So it's pretty exciting from that perspective.
Yeah. And we haven't played Papua New Guinea since 2015. I don't think we played Vanuatu since then either. I can't remember.
Not for a while. Yeah. Around that 2014 mark.
And of course,
late 2014. Yeah.
Then, of course, we'll then come up against the Philippines. First time in 4 years since we played them. Perhaps a bit of a score to settle after we beat them once, lost to them once, and they went through
yep.
a regional qualifier.
Yeah, everyone's looking forward to that one.
So really, really exciting tournament to look forward to. We'll probably be Q2 next year by the sounds of things. We're not sure where it's going to be yet.
We'll say around April or May.
Yeah, that's the rumor. We're not sure where it'll be. Hopefully, it'll be somewhere sunny and nice and really fun. It's an exciting thing to look forward to. And we look at just to wrap up this tournament, look at the individual prize winners, and there was a clean sweep for Japan. So Sabaraj Ravichandran took bowler of the tournament for his 7 wickets at 5.25 and over.
He's been bowling well in club cricket for the last year or two.
It's funny, isn't it? You and I have seen this guy for several years. 7-8 years, dominate with the bat, but his leg spin is incredibly effective. And
that's right.
And so he bowls at a pace, he bowls it accurately.
It's just made for 2020 cricket as well.
Yeah. So great for him to get that award. Kendall Kadawaki Fleming cleaned up with the best batter award. I think he's got 100 runs more than anyone else.
Yeah.
And then I want to talk about the tournament MVP, because Lucky Yamamoto Lake got the MVP, and that's the one not done on stats. That's done off the umpire's 3-2-1. So at the end of every game, the umpires award points of 3 points, 2 points, 1 point to the best three players of each game. And the MVP is worked out on that. So when you get that award, you've been the most consistent performer and that you've affected the games the most.
Yeah.
And we've talked a lot during this podcast about the approach in the power play. And Lockie is maybe not scoring the hundreds. His highest score was 57, but he's made that half century. He scored a 30 of 17, and he's impacted the game with his approach, and that's ultimately earned him the MVP award, because those two wins and those middle two games at the huge net run rate boost that we got from them were the deciding factor. So
yeah,
a worthy winner.
Yeah, good to see too. You mentioned batting orders earlier in 2020 cricket. It's there's about 9 or 10 batsmen in every team who want to open the batting. So how do you decide who does it? So we looked at Lockie as a young, fearless batsman, first and foremost, who had some real talent and was someone who would just go out there and be able to score runs in different conditions. And great to see, the selection was totally justified, and he ends up player of the tournament as a
19-year-old.
As a, yeah, really young batsman. So
he's 20 tomorrow. Happy birthday, Lockie. Yeah. So all in all, Dukes, I mean, when you look back at this 10 days, 2 weeks, job well done, I guess, and a long time coming. Must be tremendously satisfying.
Yeah, it was satisfying. It's just kind of like the first part of the mission's been completed, and we look forward to next year. So we felt like we brought together a really talented squad. So it would have been pretty disappointing if we didn't make it through. And we have done that, probably convincingly enough in the end, despite the last day. And we've got a lot to look forward to.
There's a nucleus of a side that's come together. Chatting to one of the commentators one evening, he talked about how when he looked at the team, he felt there were two guys in the team who wouldn't look out of place at the current T20 World Cup. Kendall was an obvious one. Alex Shirai-Patmore's wicketkeeping, he said he felt you could put him into any T20 team and he'd be fine behind the stumps.
Yeah.
And he talked about how as a wicketkeeper, you're in the game every ball. That means you have more chances to impact the game than anyone else. And we saw Pat with stumpings, with runouts, with catches, yeah, really impacting. And as a 34-year-old, he was still leaping like a salmon and all in all pretty sprightly.
Yeah, he's been out of the team for a number of years. So he was able to kind of, I guess, refresh himself, and he brought this newfound enthusiasm into the group. So he's kind of playing more like a 25-year-old, I thought, but with that cool head of an older player. So brought into the team as we thought he was probably our best wicketkeeper at this point. Turned out that was definitely the case, and the ability to use his experience in the middle order, which is a new role for him, being able to score 360 degrees around the ground. He's still finding his feet there, but he's shown signs that it'll be a good role for him. So, yeah, I think he'll be certainly part of the team going forward.
Some of his switch hitting, not many people in Japan or even in South Korea can play that particular shot as well as he does. When third man fine legger up, he can manipulate both sides and can do stuff that
thought he could have brought it out a bit more in the final game just to get us over the line. But
sure, thank you for that. The one last player I did want to talk about, we haven't mentioned him at all in this. And he played a very interesting role throughout the tournament as sort of a fourth, fifth bowler and sort of middle lower order batsman was Declan Suzuki.
Yeah.
He, gun fielder. We saw a bit later, he took a spectacular catch in the Indonesia series. We saw him batting anywhere from 4 to 8, I think, and sometimes bowling first change down to being the fifth or sixth bowler. Again, a young kid who's a natural sportsman and incredibly athletic. Thought he brought a lot to the team in many different aspects. And again, someone to be excited about. Need to kind of carve out exactly what his role is. But T20 cricket, sometimes someone who can come in and score 12 off 8 at the end of the innings and bowl is, at one point he bowled 3 overs for 5 in one game.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly effective.
And it helps when you can take diving catches on the boundary line as well. Don't forget that. So, yeah, at the moment he's that mix of, what do I say, Mr. Fix-It, spare parts man. But I think he's going to develop into certainly one of our most important players. He probably hates me because I've got him floating around the batting order anywhere between number 3 and number 8. So he has to either go in at the drop of a hat or sometimes I hold him back when I could tell he wants to get out there. But he does everything with, a smile on his face. And his bowling was probably a little bit better than we thought it was. He comes in and hits a really good length consistently. And as it turned out, throughout those 7 games, I think he played every game in the end.
He did, didn't he?
He never went for really much more than six and over through through those seven matches.
Useful player to have. Now, it was Japan's first ICC tournament win in 15 years.
My God.
Which is a nice thing to be able to say, in the men's anyway. There are two things that link not just this tournament win, but the Japan cricket's last tournament win. You know, we last played in a home qualifier regional tournament in 2019 with the under-19s.
Mm.
You were head coach of that team, and we won that tournament, and we won this tournament. And I think the thing that really links those two tournament victories is your moustache, which is still on your face.
Yeah.
Are we going to be seeing that? Is that a permanent fixture now, or is it going to be saved and put on the shelves and we'll see it again in the regional final?
No, it's not a permanent fixture. It's for a limited time only. It's a lucky moustache which comes out during ICC tournaments, and it helps us finish first.
Does anyone kind of give it a lucky stroke before they get questions around now?
Should I not ask? We won't go into that.
Dougal, thank you very much for joining me. This has gone a bit longer than I thought it would.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, good rerun of the tournaments. And look, we're all excited. There's still plenty of cricket to come. You mentioned at the top of the show, there's FA Cup finals this weekend. By the time I get this out, they would have come and gone. There's the Women's East Asia Cup next weekend. So I'm going
to... Good luck to the girls.
Try and wrap that up as well at some point. I haven't even talked about the JCL T20 finals yet.
No.
Way behind on my podding. I've got a Todd pod recorded. We've got Todd Lovecast on the pod. I've got to produce that and get that out at some point. So lots out there for the Japan cricket fans. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to everyone for all the support we've received from at home and abroad. It was a fantastic 10 days. Great to be into the next stage. And plenty of excitement to look forward to. So, any final words?
No, just keep supporting the Japan team. And, we'll do our best next year.
Too right, we will. Dukes, thanks very much. Everyone else, Oscar Summer. See you next time.